Hey, welcome back, everybody, to my podcast. And this episode features Jonas Mačiulis. Jonas is a good friend of mine now. After coaching him for several years with the national team, we had a good conversation today about his lessons as a player, as well as in the national team and Real Madrid and other places. He talked about the lessons he took from being a player to now being a GM, sports director, slash everything else at a club in Kėdainiai, Nevėžis, in the Lithuanian League. And he talked about everything he learned from Pablo Laso, from players, teammates, competitive practices, and all the good stuff behind the scenes that everybody wants to hear about. So please tune in, subscribe to this podcast, share this episode. Thanks for being a loyal listener. And for all the new ones, looking forward to seeing you soon again. Also, I may add, this episode features our new sponsor, which I also introduced in our last episode, ProBallers.com. ProBallers.com is the statistical website for all the nerds out there. It features over 70 leagues around the world and newly added NCAA teams that you can also search and research and analyze and all the good stuff. So please go to ProBallers.com. And during this episode, you will also see a short little segment with Jonas that we tried a little search feature that you may enjoy. All right. Thank you very much and talk soon. Bye. Jonas, važiuojam.
Right.
Let's try English. Now you're on my home turf, buddy. You're known as my Lithuanian teacher. And now I'm going to have to restrain myself not to correct you in English.
Yeah, you can do it because my English is not so good. So you can correct me whenever you want, like I did years ago in our scouting reports.
I felt every little lesson. So what's the first story that pops into your mind about my Lithuanian mistakes, which is obviously for Lithuanians probably more interesting, but maybe for the English speaking listeners.
I mean for sure. It was so many mistakes. I cannot one. But of course, like this, the most, I don't know, magical word was finte, which was like like finte, this is tricks, which you cannot use it in the basketball language.
obviously you can. With Benes, anything is possible. So you can.
It's possible, and Benes was trying to show everybody that you know Lithuanian, but it was funny.
So today we will talk about your little bit of your player career and then a little bit on your management executive career that you transitioned to. In the middle, we're going to do a segment for ProBallers.com, and we're going to analyze some things on a box score sheet, but it's nothing too specific. Just want to know your opinion. And before we get to that point, what's the first memory that comes to mind besides my stories? The first memory that comes to mind from your player career that you feel like you cherish, not one game or one, but just the situation you were in was like, I would like to go back to that any day, any time.
I mean, I would like to go, of course, you know, the most memorable game and the most famous game of mine was against Georgia. Whatever now you call it, how you call it in English, Starkatel, I don't know how you call it. So, I mean, of course, this game I watching it, I don't know how many times I watched it, but I would like to go back to the game in Madrid or Barcelona when we lost against France, bronze medals, we lost in the last seconds. I would like to go there. And it was enough just to say to Martinas Pocis, let's go faster to go faster.
And it was enough. I would like to go there to say, hey, let's go faster half court. And we're not going to be able to have a bronze medal.
Yeah, I think it was in Madrid because the second stage was in Barcelona. The final stage was in Madrid. And I remember that game too. I forgot who was guarding him on that play.
Nobody was guarding.
But that's the thing. There was somebody guarding him 2 meters away, I think. And I don't know if it was.
I was at the half court, and he was. There was one guy 2 meters away, and he was there just walking. You know, like it was like, well.
Yeah, but I would like to know if that player, and I forgot, maybe it was Edwin Jackson even, because he was there too. Did he not pressure him on purpose so Martin doesn't speed up, you know? Because you can, that's the next level, that you see that the time is ticking and you just kind of leave him because you see he's walking. If you pressure him, he's going to speed up and going to cross the half court. So that's something I would like to know.
You'll never know.
We will never know.
I would like to go to that game because that game till now hurt. That game for me hurts like probably the most till now with national team.
Yeah. It was painful. It was painful afterwards because you felt like you played a really good tournament and you deserved, both teams deserve it at the end, you know, when they play and for those medals, but it was something that just slipped out of your hand. You slipped out of it. Anyway, we go to better things. Or before we go to better things, let's talk about injuries. But it's not better things. But you went through some injuries in your past. You had a torn ACL. I remember it was early to midway through your career, but it was something that happened and you had to go through extended rehabilitation process on your knee. I remember you had to go down a notch to play in a lower level in Lithuania. What emotions do you remember going through? What thoughts were racing through your mind when you were going on the road to recovery, let's call it, because it's something that every athlete dreads, doesn't want it to happen, but it happens a lot. And then there's a lot of athletes that have to go through that rehabilitation process. Was there something you were feeling? Was there something that you were focused on specifically, something that mindfully you did to look forward, not backward?
First of all, going back to the memories, of course, it was a bad experience for sure. But there was some things like I remember till now. The first memory was the support I got from my friends and my agent and my family was incredible. I remember very good when after surgery I was high because of the medicine,
morphine.
When I was sleeping because of the painkillers, I was kind of sleeping and so on. I remember that I had some visitors and then I woke up in the middle at the middle of the night and I see some of my friends sleeping on a couch next to my bed and they were watching basketball, you know, and I was like, okay, these friends like going through this with me together, you know. Another thing, of course, family and the agent Maurizio Balducci, who passed away 5 years ago now, 2018, yes. So this Maurizio Balducci was like, family was, you know, supporting me emotionally when it was hard, you know, or something happened, you know, when I'm struggling with recovery because I had some... After a few months, I had some inflammation in my knee. I had to stay back again for like a few weeks and so on and so on. So family supported me every day. Maurizio Balducci was, how to say, a little bit harsh to me. Like he opened my eyes and said, listen, Jonas, what do you think? Basketball going to stop because you're a national team, you're playing in Milano. And you think because of your injury, basketball going to stop? Basketball didn't stop. Jordan finished his career. Nope, nothing. Nothing going to happen. Nothing going to change. So it's up to you. Don't need to, to act like a victim. You need to be and do your job. So actually, it was, for me, it was many people and many coaches and people from basketball world already said that, okay, Machul is probably never going to recover because, you know, of my, you know, these injuries for my type of my style, my type of players who is always doing the full power, strong, you know, everything doing with the power, not with the finesse or technique, talent, you know. So for these injuries was very deep it's very difficult for this type of players. And everybody was skeptical about my recovery and coming back to basketball. At least if I will be, maybe I will come back, but if I'm going to be able to perform at the same level like before injury. So national team doctors from Pittsburgh, as good as Petras Nikočiūnas, which you know very good, you know, they helped me a lot through the process. I was kind of recovered after 7 months, but something happened again. And my knee started, my power in my knee disappeared. Like after I started to play basketball already, the Baltics at that time was second Žalgiris team, kind of. And I started to play with them, practice with them. And they said, okay, I don't feel comfortable. I need to go back again to weightlifting room. To Sigitas Kavaliauskas took me for another 2 months. And after 2 months, hard preparation, very hard practices, 2-3 times a day, I came back after 9 months, one day before my birthday, to play the game against Latvian team, I think, Valmiera, if I remember. Okay, very good. And I remember, when I said play the game, my agents came, Stefano Lupatelli, Matteo Zuretti, Maurizio Balducci, they came to watch the game. And I remember very good, after very, very first contact, I felt on the floor next to their legs, and I grabbed my knee. I said, "Oh!" I said, stand up and go. Just, you know, you need to overcome these mental things and so on and so on. I didn't realize how powerful is this, and how hard actually it is to overcome this mental problems after recovering, you know, from injury. How you protect yourself, how your body actually protects yourself. So after injury, when I started already to play, 1.5 months, every small contact to my knee, every small contact, I would fall on the floor and grab my knee and like, oh, is it okay? I would react like this, like 1.5 months. So this experience later on, you know, helped me with other injuries, because I knew what is waiting, what kind of mental things I will have to overcome, what kind of process I will need to overcome, recovery and so on and so on. So this was experience of 1 month, of one year, where I didn't know if I'm going to come back or if I'm going to come back, if I'm going to be the same level player. And then, you know, I was 26 years old at that time. And I would say my future, like financial future, was not ready yet, and so on and so on. I already had a baby and many, many, many things, many struggles at the same time, you know, that you need to deal with. It was hard. There was no, other way to do your best, to try to do your best and overcome everything. Another way was to give up, but this is not the way for me.
Not an option. Yeah. It's something that you learn, you know, once you fight through those tough times, you create easy times after that, you know, because everything else ranks below that, unless you have something, as we talked before, something that's going to happen that's way above it, that's traumatic or tragic, then you have a different mind shift. But if you go through those tough times, which in reality, if every athlete at some point, more or less, some injuries are going to happen, you're going to have to deal with it. And I had now you said, when you have these phantom reactions, you know, you feel like you're insecure about your knee. After my ACL, my first ACL, it didn't, my ACL was not the problem. The second injury that I had, I was wearing a knee sleeve a lot of times for a year. And I'm starting to think, if you wear a knee sleeve, even though it just gives you comfort, it gives you confidence, you still subconsciously, you still think and you know that something is wrong with that knee, you know? And I'm not sure if that can be a mental hurdle, deeply mental, subconsciously, and still you protect yourself, because eventually my body shifted, because I was protecting my knee subconsciously after, you know, playing on after the second surgery. And that's something that I think also has to be probably studied. Maybe it's studied already. I'm just hypothesizing.
Yeah, but doctors, like the doctors who was taking care of me, they said, like, don't wear any sleeves immediately. They just, you need to, like, mentally your body needs to adjust immediately. Same. And very next day after surgery, I remember Gudas came to wake me up in the hospital and said, stand up and go. Where to go? What to do?
No, just stand up and go.
Like, go.
your crunches and go. I said, I cannot do anything. So they tried to lift my leg, the leg which was operated after surgery. And because of the pain, it bended a little bit. The knee bended a little bit. And because of the pain, I faded. I had to he said, stop faking, go. You need to start as soon as possible and you need to go. So this was, they were forcing me actually. They understood that I feel pain. They understood what I'm going through, but they were forcing me. There was no pity. There was no, you know, say this,
they didn't treat you like a victim.
Yeah, like I said, no, you need to go. Don't think about it. Okay, you already made surgery. Everything is good. Your ligaments are okay. That's it. You cannot do anything else. Just go. Of course, don't do anything. Don't do. I did a very crazy thing. Well, three weeks after was my bachelor party.
The goodness
that I came to the hospital again to take out the liquids from me. For 10 minutes, the nurses came. What you did to this doctor? We never heard him yelling at somebody, at the patient. We never heard yelling for 10 minutes straight, and all the floor of this remaking surgery, so the third floor of hospital was waiting next to the door. What did you see? What happened? At
who is that person
that Gudas is yelling at? You want to hurt yourself and all this. I remember this. Okay. Then I took it serious.
Well, sometimes that's something that you need. We can transition into coaching you, because I was wondering two things. You know, how it was to play for Pablo, because when you play for Pablo, he has a specific way of handling players, you know, and maybe you can reflect a little bit on how he handled different personalities on Real Madrid when you were playing for him. And the second part, especially, would you categorize yourself as being hard to coach or not hard to coach? And why would you be hard to coach in what regard?
Okay, first of all, I'm hard to coach, but if you are coaching, I will give you an example. For example, if the coach tells me to play me on the low post, he wants me to play a lot of on a low, cross screens and so on, it's okay. He will say, okay, you get the ball in a low post. And you play by yourself, or we have this play back screens or whatever for shooters or whatever. I'm coachable about this, and I don't need to score every time. But when I came in Milano, during the first practices, they gave me one exercise, one drill, where actually I had to start from the opposite 3-point line, dribble all the way to let's say another 3-point line, and take a shot. And I was like, what are you doing? He said, hey, we checked you shooting 40% threes. So we want you to become a shooter. Me, shooter. dribble the ball. And I actually, because I know that this is not my game, I actually refused. I started to, I'll say, kind of to fight with a coach immediately. I refused to be coachable in this way, because this is completely nonsense. Like, you cannot do it. You know, it looked like for 3 months in Milano, it looked like they didn't know what kind of player they signed. They wanted me to shoot threes, go out of the standards, shoot press, and so on and so on. So for this thing, because I already knew what kind of player I am, low post rebounds, I can make three, of course, but I cannot go run staggers and so on. I mean, like to shoot this. If you are coaching me, let's say my strengths, I think I'm coaching. I can be, I'm coachable, right? This is okay.
Yes.
I have no problems with coaches, and coaches won't have problems with me because I'm always going to be 100% on defense, whatever. And then, okay. But then coaches, they don't know me like a player, or they don't know how to use me, and they put me in a uncomfortable position. Then kind of I have that
fighting mentality.
I like to rebel.
I like.
So these are things that I mean, I didn't have any problems with Vlaso. I didn't have any problems with Argyris Pedulakis, for example. I didn't have any problems with Grigas and Žalgiris, with Sireika. Because they kind of knew how to use me. They used my strengths. All of them, I think, knew that what they're gonna get from me on defense. This is one thing, and then I am just they had to, how to say, to know how to use the right way on the offense, and I don't know.
Actually, I need to ask you if I'm flying to
sleep. Okay, before we talk about Pablo, to finish off about you, the things that I remember mostly was, yes, you were persistent on being used the right way and doing things the right way in general, not only in regards to you, but also in regards to the team, because you cared as much about the team as you did about yourself, or about where you put yourself in the best position to be successful. But the thing that I remember was also that you always loved to talk. You had a lot of opinions, and it's almost like you overanalyzed every situation where you didn't have to overanalyze every situation, you know? And that sometimes distracted yourself from what you could do best. I think that was something that was maybe something that I reflect, and that's the first thing that comes to my mind.
Yeah, it's actually the same in a daily life. I actually overthink a lot and analyzing too much. If I'm gonna do this, what's gonna happen?
Yeah. Me too.
I need to control this. I need to control that. And what's gonna happen with my daughters as well? Don't run. Don't do this. Like on Friday, last Friday, I said to my daughter, she was playing around the jumping over hurdles.
Hurdles.
And I said, stop playing because you might hurt yourself. No. She kept playing, broke her arm. I said, told you. Because I was already analyzing and I knew what's going to happen. Yeah. I told you.
Well, that's a lesson. That's a lesson they can learn. Yeah.
I like to have said to overthink and maybe something to distract myself from real life or what is most important, actually.
I think maybe not all athletes, but a lot of athletes that were at the highest level, and I think the same applies for coaches. A lot of the times there is natural overthinking because of the options that you have in your head of what could go wrong and how it could go right, you know? So you have, the longer you play, the higher you play, the more options open up. And then all of a sudden you have to start learning to close those doors to make sure that you are staying, you know, with 2-3 possible options, and then be okay with all of them, you know, because I've experienced from the coach's perspective, when we're in a coach's locker room, we're discussing every single thing, and it's impossible to predict every single thing. So you're trying to narrow down to 2-3 options. Well, let's pick and roll defense, how you want to defend the pick and roll in this particular game. And then, you know, there's this way, that way. And whichever decision you have to go with, it's not going to be the perfect one, and you eliminate the ones that you for sure don't want to use, and you have to go with what your gut and what your experience at that point says. So it's more about, the higher you go, the more options, the more just windows, doors, everything is open up, and you have to learn to start closing them, because the experience also allows you to do so.
Exactly. Basketball has, somebody told basketball is is not about, is a game of mistakes. Who, so we are, and we are analyzing what can go wrong and what mistakes we can do and what goes. So who does less mistakes wins, of course. So, you know, but then you're overthinking leads, you know, to more and more and more mistakes. So yeah, you're right. So I need to learn how to close some doors. And anyway, to narrow to these three things, which is most common or with the biggest percentage, you know, low yes. percentage happen, but ability you have to deal with.
Yeah, just the probability theory of what probably will go, the highest probability, that's what the one you go with.
And like something's happening in basketball, when I remember years ago, we played the Panathinaikos Barcelona quarterfinal. We were defending some, we were using some crazy defense with Damon Tidis and led Victor Sada to shoot three-point shot and he made and they... And he didn't work right in front of one final box. And he was shooting, I don't know, 2% three-point shots.
Well, you remember 2016 Olympics against Spain. We risked on Rubio, and Rubio made every single three, almost, I think. He was like five or six, something like that. He was crazy.
He's next captain.
But you live. And that's the thing. That's the difference when you play one game to win or lose in a series, in the final four or a series. Because in the series, you take the chances. You don't overreact to one good shooting game. You keep playing the same way because you believe that the percentages, they will regress to the mean. You know, the average, they will average out at some point. So one game in a series should not make a difference in that. But in the one game wins it all, it can. And that's the difference. How was it with Pablo? How did Pablo work with players and how was his? Because I talked to him in regards to personality management and everybody's different. So I'm wondering from your perspective of how you perceived his coaching.
I listened to your podcast, Pablo. I heard it. And well, first of all, when it comes to personality management, I think so far Pablo is the best in that job in doing that. I don't know. So many personalities, so different personalities, cultures, so different, I don't know, minds. When we had in Real Madrid, I was the first year was two Argentinians, Mexican, Lithuanian, from the Tunisian, Greek, Spanish, Americans. One is Mormon, one is Muslim, one is, I mean, so many different personalities, so many different ideas and so on. And I was surprised that I was really amazed how he was dealing with these personalities and how he knew exactly when to push one player, when to a little bit too late. Okay, this player maybe is too much. Then to say something to Spanish guys in the right moment, you know, because everybody knows how in Spain, not in Spain, in general, the local players, how they are treated in Lithuanians in Spain, Spanish, and so on and so on. So most of the times, you know, then already Pablo tells something to Philippe or to Sergio Yul or to Rudy. Things are serious, guys. We need to pay attention. So all these things, you know, I was surprised. I was amazed until now, you know, I am now when I'm more or less not, I'm not coach, but I'm working as a GM and I know how I see how people are reacting in different situations, how they overreacting or not doing something because they used to do universities, other things, but in Europe now it's different and so on. How to give advice, how to help them and so on. Pablo is in that is the best. So far what I know, maybe I'm going to meet another players, coaches or somebody else. I think there are many coaches like Pablo who is dealing with these personalities. Most of them works in NBA. He was in the interview. Is there?
Yeah.
In Europe, it's a little bit different because you can find players, you can fire players, contracts are not guaranteed, and so on and so on. Guarantee, but we have not guarantee. So players here are acting a little bit different. But in the highest level, around Barcelona, I don't know, Panathinaikos, Olympiakos, but FS, all these main teams, they have some personalities, egos, guys wants to win, and everybody thinks that they can win by themselves. Not everybody, but leaders and so on, and how to force them, in a nice way, in a correct way, in a political way, to play as one fist, one team. It was amazing to watch. I liked it very much.
What did he do different? What made him like? What's something that just just charisma? Is it just natural?
I mean, natural charisma, yes. And sometimes we already know. We already spoke about the King's Cup preparation. I already told you until I find out what is going on. That situation about the King's Cup preparation. I said, okay, next year I'm gonna know. You know, so it was. He has some methods.
Do you want to tell the story? Do you want to tell the story or not?
I mean, I don't know.
Okay, don't. Like, we don't want to. Listen,
I don't. Maybe Pablo now gonna do it. I don't know if everybody know. You know?
Yeah.
There will be no reaction. You know.
Yes. Let's keep our mouths closed.
So, how he is in a certain way. Trying to get reactions from players for the right game. It's sometimes you maybe don't understand. Of course, most of the times players don't understand coach's decision and they think that coaches are stupid. And at the end of the day, you get the full picture and you realize why he did this. Yes. We reacted like he wanted, like we reacted and we did. What he actually provoked that reaction and reacted in that way he expected, you know. So these things, I don't know. He was, I think Pablo before Real, Final Four in Real, in Madrid, and we played in Madrid 2015. I think even before he said we're gonna win, guys, we're gonna win. He drew some on a whiteboard. He draw some things like, guys, we're gonna win. I feel it. There's no other way, you know. And then again, the next year, so I say, guys, we intended to win. He didn't say that we are not gonna win. But he said, we need to do better. We need to do something extra, you know. And this, he has a feeling about his team. He has a feeling how, where to push, where to relax and so on. And he had that feeling perfect feeling about everything.
Yeah, I think that's the thing that it comes with experience, that you, once you feel what your team needs and you understand that the team is different this year than last year, you also can navigate the waters a little bit and you can manipulate or in a way project of what's going to happen. And you're trying to also, you have to have the right personnel. So with veterans, it's probably easier to do so than with young guys. With young guys, you probably have to be a little bit different. You know, there's always every team, every roster is so different. So it's kind of, and he's been around the block a little bit. So he knows, he understands the nuances of what to do and when to do what.
With veterans, these veterans, Sergio, Rudy, Felipe, now Chacho came back, you know, all these veterans, they already know, they look at Pablo, you know, what Pablo wants to do, what to call and so on. It was amazing. And how was the communication between Pablo and Sergio or Beidaron, Luca and so on? It was, if something goes wrong, they said, okay, we need technical, now it's a right time to get a technical foul because when the time comes, last seconds, they're going to go crazy. They're going to tie the game. Like, they're going to referee is going to give a technical to the other side, but it's going to hurt them more because it's going to be like tie game and 20 seconds left, you know? So all these, you know, tactical, the communication and everything, veterans and so on was amazing. And then all these veterans were nice guys, really nice guys, you know, who helped young guys, who helped foreigners, who explained things, you know, because they already, let's say, before I came to Real Madrid 2014, Pablo was there already 2 years, something like this.
More, no, two or three, because I was in Moscow.
From 2011, right?
Yeah, 3 years, I think he was there already, because I was here. Yeah.
So already players knew Pablo knew this. Immediately when we joined, the new guys, me, Paco, Gustavo, Leon, all these new players, when we joined, they already immediately explained me how it works, what kind of practices, what we need to do, how to not in conflict and so on and so on. And it was so smooth. The transition was so smooth because of the veterans that
Easy life for everybody who's coming in to understand, to get the system immediately.
Yes, but it's not more about the basketball system. It's about the system, how the life works in Real Madrid, about all this, where you need to do, what you need to do, where you need to go, how you need to go, like small thing, you know, guys, if practice is longer, guys, at 1 o'clock starts traffic because it's siesta time. If you You leave now, you go, you reach your house like in 20 minutes. But if you want to do massage, so do it for 2 hours because, or you're going to sit for 2 hours in traffic, you know?
So
small things that they explained it immediately. I said, why? From Carmelo.
different world.
Yes.
So I'm going to share my screen. We're going to go into the segment before we transition to your new career. Want to analyze a little bit on my sponsor, ProBallers.com. We're going to analyze a little bit of your career a little bit. Some things that we're going to go through, and hopefully you can help me to understand something. You can see my screen?
Yes.
All right. We're here at ProBallers.com, and I'm going to go to the homepage, and here I am going to put in your name and search for Jonas Maciulis. And here's your pretty face and then your statistics a little bit from your last season. But I want to do a trick, or I want to test you. Mm-hmm. So we can search here. We can search for teammates, and If we go into that segment, if I go down, all the teammates here are by alphabetical order, as I see. I'm wondering if you can guess, if I put press on games now, it's going to order the ones that you played with the most. Can you guess which player you played with the most throughout your career?
Ooh. Yeah, I mean, this national team included
everything. Everything. Yes. National team also.
It's going to be probably Ankunas or Kalnietis if it's the national team.
Are you sure about that?
Wait a second. Wait, Marcus Slaughter, maybe?
we're getting close. Okay, it's...
No, wait, Marcus Slaughter is only 3 years to Real Madrid, 2 years in
Ajax. Okay, third guess. Those two guesses. Now the third guess.
Wait. Who was? I would say yes, Ankunas or Kalnietis. I don't know.
Okay.
Four years in Žalgiris junior team. 4 years in Žalgiris. 10 years in national team. I mean, for sure. Like, who else?
All right. So if I tell you it was somebody from Real Madrid, who would you guess it's if it's from Real Madrid?
Chelsea, probably.
Felipe was close, but it's JC Carroll.
Whoa, JC Carroll. We played together
212 games. Yep. And with Felipe, 207, and Kalnietis and Jankunas, you were right on. It was really close. Third and fourth place. And then Gustavo in fifth place, 180. So you can see that Real Madrid, you didn't miss a lot of games, I think. And also that you can see the teammates here that I think JC also barely missed any games. He was always playing.
Oh my God, I didn't know that.
Well, there's some information.
In Real Madrid, I didn't miss any games. Any games, no injuries, no nothing. So I missed a few games because my shoulder was dislocated. Yeah. I missed a few games.
Okay.
In 4 years.
All right. That was the exercise for today, Jonas.
Oh my God. I didn't know that there is an option like this. Okay. Now I know.
Yeah. It's a cool. And also the opponents. Also, you can check which opponents you played against the most. So we can check that as well.
Right. Right. Who is that?
The one you played against the most would be.
Perperoglu.
Yes. Perperoglu, 38 games. And then Sato, 30 games. Crazy, huh?
Stratos. I mean, if Stratos, Perperoglu, I mean, we travel. He's Olympiacos, I'm from the Bikers. He is Barcelona, Real Madrid. He is.
And you always faced each other also on the post.
Yes, exactly.
All right, let's move on. Let's move on to your new career. So is there something you believed in as a player before you got this job that you completely changed your opinion on now with this job? Is there something that comes to mind that you feel like, man, as a player, I thought this, but now I'm looking at it from a different angle because I worked this behind the scenes as a GM?
I mean, okay, the biggest change is dealing with agent, because when I was a player, agents was on my side. Now we are.
Right.
I mean, this is the biggest difference in this job. But I actually was thinking about the last few years of my career. I was discussing Stefano Lupatelli and Maurizio Balducci was alive. We were talking a lot what I should do after. Maurizio Balducci told me to try to do like podcast or like during the games to comment the games, how you call it?
Analyst commentator.
Like analyst commentator and so on and so on. He said, I think you would be good in this position. And then the year, I would like to stay more connected to basketball than I see, more to live, little bit to live that. I would say basketball life, trips, coming to practices, locker room is different now, coach's locker room, not players' locker room, but to live that, to continue to live that life, to be really close to basketball, not just to talk and analyze everybody. So for me, this choice, I think I'm very happy about. And I think I'm learning many things. For sure, I'm learning many things. You know, how to print, not to print, but to type the contracts, how to put the details, how to do different countries, English, Lithuanian, and so on. So how different laws, different. And so I'm learning this stuff because I didn't need it. Yeah. When I was a player.
Agents took care of that.
Agents took care of this. So now I'm dealing with it from team side. I'm doing many things that we are a small club. Only, I'll say our office is three people, you know. And an owner plus three people. So it's very a small club, and we need to share many, many things, you know, which usually probably I'm not sure. I consider it sport director, which I'm not supposed to do, let's say, to meet VIP person at the entrance, you know, to do many things that I'm doing just because we're a small club, you know. But I'm that kind of person that always said the leader, the boss, the leader, he needs to know what is going on from the lowest level, like what are the struggles of laundry woman, cleaners, all the state. He needs to understand the struggles of
from the ground up.
So this is what I'm doing here in this club. I know what are the struggles. I know now let's say we even learned how to count. Okay, five guys are taping. Everybody use this, so we need five tapes per practice. So we need to order for 1 month. We need to do this. Three and a half boxes. Okay, and then you know. Okay,
inventory.
That's already, you know, that you have 2 weeks left, and you need to order again. And, you know, all these small things. You know, you're learning, you're studying, you're taking inside like experience. And then maybe I will have a chance one day to do it at a higher level. Who knows? Maybe I'm going to stay here forever. Who knows?
No, it's a great learning experience because of the hands-on experience. I think it's probably also very useful to go to a smaller club at first, just to see everything from the ground up and see every level that it takes to go up. And then step by step, you will understand once you go further that already this can be taken care of by this person, this can be taken care of by this person, and it will be easier. I think it's probably the perfect transition, actually, if you think about it.
Well, I don't know if it's perfect or no, but you know, there are, I think, two ways of doing this. You finish and you stay next to the GM and learn, let's say, kind of.
Yeah.
Like Jan Kunas did, Irmotė Jūnas.
Yeah,
right. You can do this, or I became immediately, and I'm learning from my mistakes. I'm doing mistakes because nobody is giving advices to me. You know, like there is nobody next to me who did this job more years and we have more experience. You know, so I'm doing this job actually. I know what player this is. I'm still kind of like everybody. Likes to say you need to kill a player in yourself when you finish your career. You know?
But That's the tough part.
But it helps me because I know what are the needs of a player. Who they need therapist, they need this, how to feel it, when a player lands after long trip, you know, that you need to go to come to meet him in an airport before the season, let's say, with the food. Because he needs to eat. He don't need to travel from Vilnius to Kedaini 2 hours with an empty stomach. You know, you meet, you talk, you know, all these small things, you know, I know from a player's perspective, and then players comes and they find this, look like, hey, this is a small club, but you take care of very small details, you know.
Yes, for details.
Player, which we cannot pay big salaries, but we can take care of these small details. Which gives, I don't know, trust from players, you know, and they say, okay, they're taking care of us. We need to do our job, you know, we need to give something back, you know. So this is, we are a small club and we need to, the only thing for us, which we can have advantage in front of bigger clubs by doing small things good, really good, you know, small things to take care of small details. For players not to have any thoughts, and
it's a competitive advantage also because players talk, agents talk, everybody talks behind the scenes, and they say, okay, this is a small club, but it's a good starting point because they take care of you personally, and it will be a comfortable transition. Let's say if you're a rookie, if you're somebody that's experienced in Europe for the first time or had some bad experiences before, the agents know, the sports directors, everybody around knows that. Everybody talks, and the players will find out whether something is right or wrong. I remember in Germany, I was in a small club in Germany in second division, and we were already, when I was already coaching there, I remember I was picking up players from the airport because I was the fluent English speaker. I could connect with them easiest. It was an easy transition. It was something that they could feel comfortable, you know, talking about anything. It's not something that they're not understood. So it was easy from that perspective. But also the one of the small detail that I always kept in mind was we had a lady that was responsible for the finances. But like you said, in a small club, everybody does everything. It's you have to help in every corner. If there's somebody that the mattresses need to be picked up in the floor and the, whatever it is. And she was always, whenever the new player arrived, she prepared the apartment beforehand, and the refrigerator was always full. The refrigerator was full with food, with drinks, with any kind of specialties from our area, which was fish. So everything was prepared for the player to not to have to go shopping right away, but he goes home and he has an adjustment period where he can feel comfortable and can make his sandwiches or whatever he wants. And then you let him go, you know, like, you know, get him adjusted. But those things matter because it's a soft landing in a new spot. And it's much better to coach them when they come to practice because they have their mind not full with stuff that they have to deal with off the court, but it's easier to come in and you are a professional and you just take care of your stuff that you have to take care of, and everything off the court is taken care of beforehand.
Yeah, so these things, you know, the player comes, lands, I don't know, after 12 hours flight, you give him, I don't know, salads to eat on the way back to his apartment is ready with water, with some snacks for the morning, for breakfast. And then, okay, well, after breakfast, he comes to practice, he has time, you know, to go shopping or whatever. But this, let's say, it doesn't cost a lot, first few meals, you know, like dinner, let's say, and breakfast. Doesn't cost a lot, you know, but for player,
yep,
mentally and everything, it's a lot. You have a player mentally ready for practices immediately, you know? Not like now we have a player who landed and he said, you're the one, he said, are you hungry? No. It's like, it's you flew, you all like this, you ate something. So, come on, man. Like, you're hungry. You have to be hungry. Possible that you're not hungry. Little bit.
he doesn't want to be a burden. He doesn't want to make a problem.
Player as well, but yes, these small things, you know, you need better transition for it.
So that's those things you mentioned that helped you also from being a player to go into this job, that you, from your experience as a player, it helped you to understand what a player needs, whether it's from the coaches, from the staff behind the scenes. How did your player experience help you with the scouting process? Because that's something I think my listeners also would be curious about. From the player's perspective, what do you look for when you watch? Obviously, every position is different. You look for different things. But what do you look for? Is there anything particular to look for when you scout a player on tape, you know, whichever level he's coming from, whether it's in Europe, lower level, or it's in from college? What's something that you ask people about or when you talk to him? What do you look for? Something that in particular that you as a player could only notice?
Yeah. Okay. First of all, when we are scouting, first of all, of course, by the positions, we're scouting different things. We need shooter. Regular things, how he uses, let's say, shooter, how he uses stagger screens, how he goes, if he shoots immediately, spot up or whatever, or if he, what is the common rookie mistake who comes from States, that they don't change pace, they don't change their rhythm going through the street. They jog and they cannot take a shot because the defender jogs after him and there is no open shot. So, you know, to go in, change pace, use fakes, you know, we need to teach them. And so far, this is, let's say, common mistake and common minus, let's say, when we are scouting Americans, rookies, you know. So we pay this attention when we know that if we're scouting rookie, we're scouting the player second year in Europe. We see like if a player already second year in Europe and he does the same mistake like rookie, okay, he's not willing to learn, he's not willing to adapt, he is just, you know, he wants to stay in the same in the same level, and the player don't have a desire to improve and to go to, you know, it's hard. And then of course, character. When we asking, the main thing is if a player is competitive during the practices and the game, if he really wants to win everything, doesn't matter. It's a shooting contest. It's a running up and down. I don't care. But if he don't have this, this is the most. I was the same player. I wanted to win everything and every moment, every drill, every. If you don't have this passion, like last year we had one. His agent was pushing that player. He really wanted. Okay, maybe he's not in big enough. Maybe his size, and then we came to conclusion. But guys, look, the way he's fighting, the way he's doing everything. Maybe he has less talent, but his heart, his fighter's heart is amazing. We need to give him a chance, and then we gave him a chance, and he became one of our best players. You know? After New Year, you know, so it's like this. If a player is not willing to fight, if a player is not willing to compete, you cannot do nothing, you know. And this is a thing that it's a new generation. It's a new thing that I need, and it's a new normal, new reality. That next game, yeah. Next drill, next thing. No. In our team, there is no next. Or you do it, or you run and compete immediately, or you're going to run 20 times. Just if you want just to run, you're going to run 20 times instead of two or one, you know.
But that's the thing, that competition or competitiveness, when nobody is watching, when only your teammates are watching, the coaches are watching, that's more important than the competition and the drive when the cameras are on, because everybody wants to win and wants to compete when the cameras are on. But you see the real 5 to 10% that you can get out of the player in practice, and you see when he's triggered, when he wants to, when he loses a scrimmage, that he wants to win the next one. Those things matter, and that those things, I think, only the coaches, the inside knows, that you can ask through your connections.
Yeah, I remember our practices 2014-15 with Real Madrid. I mean, that was so competitive practice. me and Cioni would be every one guy on the floor, another guy on the floor, pushing, acting, pulling. I mean, it was so competitive, not in a nice way. Sometimes even fights and so on, which happens between men, you know, but
it happens. It happens on successful teams.
Yeah, but then we go on the floor with the same. We put the same jersey. We fight for each other.
For each other, yes.
There is no how to say, hard feelings or whatever. You did something in the practices. No. We fight for each other. That was amazing. That was one of the most competitive practices during the whole year. I mean, whole year. Was so competitive, so high level that I never met it, or before or again after. Even in Real Madrid, the next 3 years was not so competitive like it was the first year.
That's great analysis, because there is a huge difference between men and women, obviously, but in terms of how we bond and how we become brothers, because. From the reading that I did and the podcast that I listened to, women bond more through emotional bonding, through closure, through experiences together, you know, in a good way, and men bond through struggle, because it's a hormonal reaction that takes place that I'm not qualified to explain, but it's something that happens when during wartime, for example, when the brothers, they fight for each other, they fight, you know, there's some internal conflict, obviously, but you go through struggles together, and that makes you brother for life. That makes you something that you know that he's going to stand by you. You're going to stand by him no matter what, because you went through all the grind, all the hustle together. And until this day, the people I talked to that I played with, or even the national team players, that we were all together in the same boat. We struggled with the same things. We struggled with the same topics, you know, whether we had fights amongst each other, verbal fights, fist fights, you know, I mean, we saw it all, But that makes you also brothers for life, because you see, it's a different connection that you have with other people off the court.
Exactly. These things between men in a man team, in a man organization, it's...
Yes.
Without this, you cannot make a great group, the winning group, the good team or winning, I don't know, successful team, winning team or whatever.
So the last thing I wanted to talk to you about before we go into the ATOs, from your perspective, also your experiences, and now in your current position, which you also experience as a player, what do you expect from your assistant coaches? What are some things that assistant coaches, video scouts that are on the floor with you during the games, that you see some information, something that you need to some feedback that you need to hear? What are some things you look for also in your current role that you tell the assistant coaches to be more aware of?
Okay, first of all, assistant coaches is the connection between good assistant coaches. They are a connection between team and the head coach, in my opinion, because I always have this, you know, like a good cop and bad cop. So we have this same, like the connection between assistant coaches and the team. I have to know the inside, I would say, information. If somebody is feeling bad, but somebody, like we had in the past, some things that, you know, assistant coach is shooting the player and he says, "I'm homesick. I don't know. Something happened, you know." And actually, what happened, you know, we through the agent later on, because it wasn't. He was not willing to open up to us through the agent. They found out the struggles at home and so on and so on. We let him go a few days home. He came back another person, you know.
Yeah.
So these things, I mean, tactical things, it's on head coach and what he wants. But for me, like, I trust our coaches from a tactical perspective, like tactical way things. But all these small things like outside the court life and so on, and the players a little bit opening up to assistant coaches during the individual shoot arounds or whatever. I need to know, even, you know, to pay attention on small, I would say red marks. No, I don't know how.
Red flags.
On the small red flags that, you know, for a moment, we were struggling to understand what happened to this player, that for 1 month he cannot perform good. And he said about this, that assistant coach came to me, "Something happened at home." So, okay, I started to check through the agents, through it. I found out the situation 2 days ago. He was like, "Why, you fired me? No. Go home, fix your problems, come back." And he came back, actually became times MVP, I think, of the month in LKL.
These things
happens, like, I need to know this. Is what I assistant coaches and from the physical condition coach, from our doctor, I heard your podcast, I think one of the last podcast passage.
Yeah.
How important it is to choose the right persons in a physios, because they are. So this is exactly what I am doing, because, and this I understand and I get it from my players' experience as well. You know, all these things comes from players' experience, but now I don't need to talk my feelings to others. I need to try to solve problems for others now.
Yeah. So, Yeah. You need to pick up on those, that information is out there, and you need to pick up the little details of the information to make the right decision to go on.
Most important, Max.
Yes. So before we go into the ATOs, I made a mistake that I wore a beige sweater with the background that's the same beige. But allow me to correct your English. payback time, buddy. No, one thing I think you probably misspoke, but I wrote it down was when you said crunches instead of crutches.
Crunches
is sit-ups. I had to put it out there, but I had to. So ATOs, we're going to go through it quickly. The first thing that comes to your mind, you know the process. You listen to enough episodes. So let's go. If you had to teach a class in basketball, what part of the game would you teach? If you go to university, you have to teach one hour of basketball, whether it's on the court or off the court. What's the thing you teach?
Probably I'm going to explain the same things like that without competition during the, if it's going to be on a court in practice or just a verbal like explanation or whatever.
Either or.
And so I would explain that this, like we said before, that without competition, without competitive thesis, without these struggles, you cannot build a winning team.
So not how to come off staggers.
No. I mean,
I'm kidding. Not to come off stagger screens. Okay. If not a career in basketball after you stop playing, what else would you have went into?
I mean, I cannot imagine my life without basketball in some kind of position or GM or coach. Coach, no, but maybe some federation, some kind of position, somewhere I cannot imagine. I would go maybe with the real estate to do something. I mean,
best advice you received as a player?
Best advice I received as a player. Probably that would be from Maurizio Balducci, basketball. Basketball won't stop without you. So you need to take care of yourself. And we were talking, he was this about the injury, but later on he explained it about that I finished career and what's gonna, basketball never stops. So you have to understand that you are just a small part of basketball world and you need to take care of yourself and not to be, you know, like a baby. Why nobody paying attention to me? Why are people not taking pictures now anymore with me? Why, you know, these things, like you need to realize that you already done and basketball does without you won't stop. You need to take care of yourself and find your, you need to find a place in basketball world, but basketball people won't, I'll say, if you're going to disappear, basketball people are not going to miss you.
Yeah. That's something I would like to talk to you about more later at maybe some other episode in about something mindfully that you go through after you retire, but that's for another podcast. Best or advice that you would give to yourself from your current self to your younger self when you started off playing?
Enjoy every moment. Enjoy every moment and it doesn't matter what's happened, you lose or whatever, take something from every loss or every win and enjoy every moment because it's short. 10 years and you're done.
For every moment, but it's short.
Best worthwhile professional investment? What did you purchase or what did you invest in for your professional career that you feel like that was the best investment I did?
I mean, probably all my therapy things, like I started to take care of myself more after injuries or all these game ready, Normatec, all these complex, all these machines that helps me to recover after practices, you know, after games. You don't need to lose time, you know, more in a locker room. You have everything at home and so on. So these are my best probably investments.
What's the biggest challenge for you during the season, right now in the current role, right now?
During the season is I don't know, Okay, first of all, like the biggest challenge, because now we are losing a lot of games because we have brand new teams with 11 new players. So to be patient.
Not to get down on yourself.
Yeah, but to be patient coaches, to be patient with some players, with rookies, and not to make like fast decisions without giving enough time for players, you know, to adjust because immediately you lose 2 or 3 games, you want to make changes.
Yeah.
You want to make change, do something, you know, but you need to give time. So this is and the most challenge.
Most you teams.
Stay calm.
Yeah. Keep your emotions in check. And the biggest challenge after the season?
I believe the biggest challenge after the season is like immediately to start recruiting new players, to talk to the biggest challenge again to sit in front of computer and start scouting. This is the biggest challenge that you actually would like to spend some time with family more, whatever, and to travel. So you need to know how to mix it and to find the time for both.
And the last question that I ask almost every guest, I didn't ask everyone, but the favorite failure, and we talked about the French game in 2014 for the bronze medal match. But apart from that, what's your favorite failure that you remember the most and you learned the most from, if you go back?
I think it would be like what I learned from in 2016 against Australia. We lost a lot.
What?
That I always, if you remember, I got some offensive fouls immediately and so on. So at the end of the day when I watched the game, I think they forced me to do this by actually getting the ball in my hand and forcing my mistakes and forcing for me, how to say, to do what I'm not capable to play pick and roll, to penetrate, and then charge. I got 3 offensive fouls in first quarter, probably. And then I checked at the game. I thought that I opened that, but at the end, then I checked it. I watched the game after. I said, okay, we lost that game a lot and so on. And I said, okay, they actually tricked with me, showing that it's open lane and everything.
They
put some bait.
Yes. Good job. I didn't think of that word. All right, let's finish on a high. Thanks a lot, Jonas. It was great catching up, and I hope we can do the next one Lithuanian with something. I have some more things in mind for the Lithuanian culture and mindset, so maybe we can do the next one in Lithuanian.
For sure. It would be better.
For me. For you.
And reverse payback. All right, man. Thanks a lot. I'll talk to you soon.
Thank you. It was nice to be part of your podcast, finally.
I told you. All right. Thank you. Bye. Bye, everybody.